Hello, I'm Jason Rugard of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. Welcome to a special summer show. Every Friday, I'll be taking a week-by-week look back at the summer of 1990. This was a box office season that was amongst the most competitive and influential in movie-going history. On each show, I'll be chronicling the performance, critical response, and historical relevance of the biggest hits and costliest misfires that shaped the summer of 1990. Episode 6, June 29th to the 31st, 1990. Our first film is Days of Thunder.
Where'd you see your drivers from?
The Eagle Rock.
It's up around Wilkes-Barre, isn't it?
No, Glendale, California.
He's a Yankee?
Not exactly. If you're from California, you're not a Yankee. You're not really anything.
Tim tells me you've been running open wheels.
That's right.
And now you just want to up and drive NASCAR.
That's right.
What do you know about stock car racing?
Well, watch it on television, of course.
You've seen it on television?
ESPN. The coverage is excellent. You'd be surprised at how much you can pick up.
I'm sure I would. Look, this may not be the best time for you to run this car.
Let me drive. I won't make a fool out of you.
Hell, I thought this was gonna be a joke.
You were lucky in that tunnel turn, because that car was way out of shape.
Well, you think it was luck, let's do it again.
Days of Thunder roared onto the big screen on June 29th, 1990. It debuted in the pole position, stealing the weekend's top spot from Dick Tracy, which had reigned the previous 2 weeks. For years, reporters, studio executives, and fans repeatedly requested a sequel to Cruise's 1986 hit film, Top Gun. But the star was adamant that the story of Pete Mitchell, aka Maverick, was complete, and that there would be no follow-up. Which was proven inaccurate, as Top Gun 2 is slated for release during summer 2020. But getting back to 1990, Cruise reunited with his Top Gun director Tony Scott and Uber producers Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson in a semi-sequel slash remake to Top Gun that would be forever known as Days of Thunder. Tom Cruise's star had been cemented with hits like Cocktail, Rain Man, and his Oscar-nominated performance in Oliver Stone's Born on the 4th of July. And he had proven himself especially cunning at balancing his career, doing a few prestigious pictures before delivering a crowd-pleasing blockbuster for eager moviegoers. Riding high on a wave of anticipation, Days grossed $15 million, or $32 million today, which was considered something of a disappointment at the time of its release. You see, Thunder opened with less than any of the previous expensive star vehicles that had preceded it thus far. Paramount Pictures, the company producing and handling distribution, slated the film to premiere over the potentially very lucrative July 4th weekend. Expectations were so great that other studios avoided dating their products on this weekend for fear that Thunder would overshadow their movies. Now, Thunder would eventually gross a solid $82 million, or about $175 million adjusted for today, but it was an almost 50% decline from Top Gun's grosses just 4 years prior. In retrospect, Days of Thunder is a nearly perfect summer movie. It's the kind of no-brain flick that you enjoy in an air-conditioned theater on a steamy late June evening. I've always held a soft spot for this movie, which I affectionately dubbed Top Car. I even tried to get into NASCAR racing for a period when I was a kid, even going so far as to attend a few races live. And to be honest, I realized I liked Days of Thunder the movie more than I actually liked auto racing. Growing up, I was, and still am, a massive Tom Cruise fan. He's done a brilliant job balancing out his career choices, and he's never phoned in a role. Seeing Cruise's name in a marquee or poster is almost like a seal of quality at this point. I trust the man's instincts, and I'm willing to follow him on these cinematic adventures. Now, the cast of Thunder is one to marvel at. Robert Duvall is excellent as the archetype father figure to Cruise's character Cole Trickle. And let's not overlook a young Nicole Kidman, who became a star in America due to this film, and subsequently also became Miss Cruz for a decade. The chemistry between Kidman and Cruz is essential, and a missing element from Top Gun, in my opinion. In that movie, it feels like Maverick loves himself more than Kelly McGillis, whereas in Thunder, you can actually sense that Cole Trickle's character may and has met his equal. There's also heat between Cruz and Michael Rooker, who plays opposing driver Rowdy Burns. Their rivalry is intense, and when they become friendly, it feels earned. Also, look for a startlingly skinny John C. Reilly as one of Cole's pit crew. In fact, for years, this was the only exposure I had to Reilly, so to see him transition into a funny character actor was kind of a revelation. The script for Thunder was penned by well-respected Oscar-winning screenwriter Robert Towne. His punchy dialogue and lean storytelling are a perfect fit for the material. Even if this was just a job for hire and not a passion project, Towne gives the characters interesting things to say and do. Perhaps the most memorable aspect of the film is the majestic music by Hans Zimmer. Today, the composer is world famous, but back in 1990, he only had one notable credit to his resume. And after Thunder, he would be in high demand for the next two decades. It's a beautiful score, with a hum-worthy theme and melodies that seamlessly blend to the action on screen. If you think I'm alone in my affection for Days of Thunder, you're wrong. Recently, Quentin Tarantino has stated that Thunder is his favorite racing movie of all time. And even Siskel and Ebert gave the picture two thumbs up, as opposed to their negative review of Top Gun a few years earlier. Even having withstood massive production problems, budget overruns, and clashes between director, studio, and producers, today, all that is left is the simple, guilty pleasure known as Top Car, or properly titled, Days of Thunder. Our second film is Ghost Dad.
Bill Cosby's got good news and bad news.
Stop the cab!
The bad news is...
What's wrong with Daddy?
The good news is he's...
A big sissy.
A ghost.
A ghost?
Do you know how weird that's going to make me look? Oh, there goes Diane, you know, Casper's daughter.
Everything's perfectly normal.
Bill Cosby. Ghost Dad. Rated PG. Starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
Well, this one's a doozy. Ghost Dad is a family comedy starring America's favorite father, Bill Cosby. I know, hindsight's a bitch. But back in 1990, Cosby was still considered one of the biggest and most beloved stars in the world. Here, he plays a workaholic widower who is killed by a satanic-worshipping taxi driver. No shit. I'm not making this up. And remember, this is a family film. Cosby's spirit isn't ready to cross over, and he's given a few days to roam around Earth and get his affairs in order, with work and with his kids. As you can tell, it's no wonder Cosby's large fanbase didn't turn out for this film's opening weekend. It limped into the sixth spot, grossing $5 million, or $10 million today, $24 million total, or $52 million adjusted for today's money. I can't imagine any parent seeing the trailer for Ghost Dad and consciously taking their kids to the screening. My girlfriend fondly recalls seeing the movie as an adolescent. I never saw the picture as I was too interested in the summer's other, better star vehicles, and Cosby was never funny to me. I was gonna watch it in preparation for the show, but I said fuck it. Watching Cosby on screen is not something I'm interested in doing ever again. The most peculiar aspect of Ghost Dad is that it was directed by veteran actor Sidney Poitier. What could have attracted him to this terrible material? In the early stages of development, director John Badham of Saturday Night Fever acclaim and Steve Martin were attached to the project, but both wisely moved on. The outlandish script is attributed to the writers of Wild Wild West, for reference point, and Phil Alden Robinson, who made Field of Dreams. Now that's perplexing. Ghost Dad, would prove to be the last film headlined by Cosby, as his star was clearly starting to fade, and he was being relegated to a television star, a term that used to be condescending. This particular piece of cinematic garbage routinely appears on worst of all time lists, and it's no wonder why. Here's to saying, fuck Ghost Dad. That'll do it for today's show. Join me next week when I look back at the exploits of Bruce Willis in Die Hard 2. Thanks for listening.